It's the first wave of free agency edition of the Horsing Around podcast. Thanks for joining us. As always, I'm Andrew Mason, joined by the esteemed, inimitable Andy Lindahl from Denver Sports 760, 850 KOA, 94.1 KOA, and of course the Broncos Radio Network. Andy, good to catch up with you, man.
Yeah, so Andrew, we had to wait a bit. I guess we thought we'd get a little more action in the weekend, Thursday, however you want to look at it. Nothing really played out like we thought to this point, especially when coming to Tony Romo. But you know what? John Elway promised us moves along the lines, and that's what we've gotten, I guess.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, really, it's not just moves along the line, but you're talking about big guys. I mean, now, they made a final move late Monday to sign a guy who was a defensive end in New Orleans. He's going to shape up as an outside linebacker in the Broncos 3-4. It's Kasim Etabali. He's a kind of in the Dakota Watson mold as far as a guy who can rush the passer when need be. He can play outside linebacker, but really more known as a special teamer. But you look at the four signings before that, two offensive linemen, two defensive linemen, all well north of 300 pounds. All of whom play with varying degrees of nastiness in terms of Ron Leary, the guard probably going to be penciled in at left guard. Menelik Watson, potential right tackle, although Vance Joseph thinks he might get a look at left tackle. John Elway also mentioned that as well. And on the defensive line, you've got Zach Kerr from Indianapolis, a younger guy who the Broncos really have high hopes for and really feel positive about where he can go. And then a proven veteran, Demata Pecco, formerly of the Bengals, so Vance Joseph is familiar with him from Cincinnati. All these guys, they're big guys, they're physical guys, and they're strong attitude guys. And those are three things the Broncos were looking for up front that they felt like they needed to upgrade after a year in which they finished in the bottom six in both rushing yardage and rushing yardage allowed.
Yeah, it's interesting because as you said, you get the big bodies. It was funny because I was doing the show today with our friend Romy Bean as Ed's on assignment for us this week. And, you know, Romy was getting excited about the size of all the guys that we added because let's make no mistake about it. If you're a Bronco fan, they got pushed around up front a little too often, I think, for the front office's liking last year and, frankly, for the coaching staff's liking as well. So they're obviously taking moves to make sure that doesn't happen again. But, my friend, we've been through this before. I'm excited about the signings, especially Pecco. You know, I think we're all familiar with his work in Cincinnati. He admitted to us in a radio interview today there was a nice little rivalry brewing between the Broncos and the Bengals because they played a lot of meaningful games, maybe not in the playoff, but certainly for playoff positioning in the last few years. But, look, I will also say this, just to be fair about things. You and I have seen the switch to power before when Josh became head coach along the offensive line, and we've seen the signing of big bodies to try to add girth to the defensive line. What I do like about these signings, these guys seem to have good footwork. They seem to be commanding double teams. This isn't just girth that's out there. It looks like girth that can move a little bit, and if you don't have the combo of both, just being big in the NFL is not enough. I think they've done certainly more than just sign some big guys right now.
Well, Kerr, it's particularly interesting because he's a 334-pound player who can play three and even five technique. I've watched quite a bit of film on him the last few days and seen a lot of times where the Colts would line him up outside. And in fact, there were the sack that he got of Trevor Siemian back in week two. He's outside. He's over the tackle, and then he drives inside at the snap, goes against Max Garcia, and really gets Max Garcia back on his heels. And then as Trevor Siemian scoots up to try to move forward in the pocket to maybe get a scramble for a first down on third and two, very nice change of direction by Zach Kerr to get inside through a potential hold by Garcia and get the sack that forced the Broncos to punt. That kind of ability to change direction, that lightness on his feet, really, you don't expect that. And when I brought that up to Vance Joseph, and he agreed, and he said, you know, this is a guy who ran the 40 in 5-flat coming out of college. And there's, you think about a 334-pound guy that has that kind of speed, that kind of athleticism. You know, the Broncos really think they got a steal in Zach Kerr. I can't underscore that enough. They love the fact that the Colts did not give him a restricted tender and that he was available. And he's not even considered an unrestricted free agent. If you don't get a tender, you're just a street free agent. So it doesn't even count toward the compensatory calculation. Zach Kerr doesn't even count in that regard. So they feel like they got a steal. And Pecco, the one thing you see him, he's not going to necessarily get the big numbers, but he's going to draw a double team. I mean, he's the classic set the other guys up to make plays because he can occupy blockers. And Kerr, he can get some double teams as well. And you've got, don't forget, you've got Derek Wolfe there, and you're going to have Shane Ray / Shaq Barrett, Von Miller. So, you know, if there's going to be a double team on Pecco and there's going to be a double team on Kerr because they're coming from the inside, that means maybe you're talking about a one-on-one for Derek Wolfe or a one-on-one for Shane Ray, and that's where you can really start causing problems to a team, really start breaking down their pocket.
Well, and look, you start adding in an Adam Gotsis, a Kyle Pecco, the younger cousin of Domitar. Is it Domitar or D'Amato? I thought someone called him Domitar today. You've got to help me out with this pronunciation. Either way, he's the older cousin of Kyle Pecco. If you were to get a Vance Walker back, which I know John always said he still has some interest in talking to both Vance Walker and Dakota Watson, which I think would both be great, you know, returns to the team. That's quite, with Derek Wolfe, as you mentioned, that's quite the defensive line, and guys that I think bring that nastiness and that attitude that I think they're looking for in that front line.
Yeah, Domita, by the way. I'm actually looking at the Bengals 2016 pronunciation guide when looking at it. So Domita Pecco. And there's another thing about Pecco that's crucial. And crucial in the wake of the other big news on Monday, which of course was the retirement of DeMarcus Ware. Now, it was questionable whether the Broncos were going to bring him back. They talked to him. They were going to let him test the market. There are reports that the Rams, where Wade Phillips, of course, has gone, and under whom DeMarcus Ware had a tremendous amount of success, were talking to him and considering an offer. But DeMarcus Ware retires from the game. So the Broncos are without the guy who was their defensive captain for the last three seasons. So you're talking about a leadership void. And while you're going to count on guys and hope that guys like Von Miller, Brandon Marshall, you know, Darian Stewart, TJ Ward, Chris Harris Jr., that those guys can step up and grow into leaders, Domita Pecco has been a Bengals defensive captain for just under a decade. He's been a leader for a long, long time. You can even go back to 2011, the year of the lockout, and Pecco was the guy who was organizing their entire defense during the lockout to come in and go work out. There's a sports performance center in the Cincinnati area that he got everyone to go to, kept everyone together, and, you know, it was a big part, I think, of building team chemistry for a club that, you know, had a quarterback change that year, but made the playoffs as a wild card team in 2011 after struggling in 2010. And I think Pecco's leadership played a big part in that and the successful seasons they had in going to the playoffs year after year in the first half of the 2010s. And so with Ware retiring and out of the picture, I think Pecco is going to factor in huge as a leader, and that's a big part of the reason why the Broncos signed him.
Yeah, it was fascinating. To your point, I think the Broncos had some interest. I don't know how you feel about it. DeMarcus kind of took everybody by surprise, chose to announce it on Instagram. The word really got out because Adam Schefter retweeted it. No official announcement through either of his former teams. By the way, Wade Phillips did get Kayvon Webster tonight, as Kayvon and everybody kind of announced that he's going. And you know what? Good for Kayvon. He deserves a crack at a starting job. Wasn't going to get it here.
You know what? Every guy, I think, needs to take that chance if it's there. You know, we saw it recently with David Bruton Jr. Going to Washington. We saw it way back. Remember Keith Burns? He took a couple of shots to go try to play more on defense and be more than a special teamer. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But if you don't take that chance, how do you know? So good, you know, really happy for Kayvon Webster. You know, his leadership's going to be missed in that room on special teams, but you know, hopefully he's going to get more playing time at cornerback, and hopefully he'll be able to get on the field quite a bit for Wade Phillips. Certainly we know how much Wade likes him.
Yeah, well, look, and a good professional kid, a kid I enjoyed covering, and you know what, good for Kayvon. We're all pulling for him. You know, obviously they're not even on the schedule this year, so it's easy to pull for him, and hopefully he and Wade find success, two guys that, you know, are going to be, you know, a special part of a special group when it goes to that 2015 team. Getting back to DeMarcus, I don't know how you feel about it, Andrew, but when we get an announcement like we did today, it almost feels to me like, you know, John Elway was pretty no bones about it. He was pretty much in a no bones about it mood, and we'll talk about some of his other comments, I'm sure, throughout this. But in particular with DeMarcus, he said it's just best he goes and tests the market right now, meaning I've given him my price. I don't think he much cared for it. Maybe he can find a higher price somewhere else. And I think when you see a retirement like we saw today, DeMarcus, I think, might have tested the waters and realized for the money the teams out there in the NFL are willing to pay me, I'm going to go ahead and keep my health. He's a man of the world. He's well-spoken. I could see him doing TV on any of the major networks. He'd be an asset to any TV group that he joined. He's just a great guy. He was an honor, frankly. He's up there with Peyton Manning, an honor to cover. And I don't know about you. To me, the retirement says to me the NFL paycheck. And understand, I know we got blue collar folks listening to this, but DeMarcus Ware is accustomed to a certain salary, as we all get to. And when anybody's asked to take less than you've made most years, we'll say even half of what you've made in most years, we're all going to kind of maybe think twice about whether we want to continue down that path. He chose not to. Good for him.
Yeah, and the other thing to consider is that he had nothing more to prove. I mean, he, in terms of the sack total for his career, he's at that Hall of Fame level. He has the Super Bowl ring, the All-Pro selections, the Pro Bowl appearances. I don't know what he could add to his resume that could make his case for Canton any clearer than what he's already done. And I say all that, and I don't even mention the fact that for a Super Bowl winning team that was built on a dominant defense, a defense that's going to go in the pantheon of the great defenses ever to play this game, that DeMarcus Ware was maybe not the most dominant player, because of course we had Von Miller on the other side, but significantly dominant. I mean, the Broncos don't win Super Bowl 50 without DeMarcus Ware. They probably don't even make it to Super Bowl 50 without DeMarcus Ware and the way he terrorized Tom Brady in the AFC Championship game that year. And having that bigger role on a great Super Bowl winning defense, I mean, that's, you know, to me, that was the period and the exclamation point. Everything else was just gravy. In a few years, you're going to be talking about him getting his bust in Canton, Ohio, and even though he only played for the Broncos 3 years, you know, certainly since one of those was Super Bowl year, I think he's going to be rightfully claimed by both the Broncos and the Cowboys as a Hall of Famer. So I think he'll be another part of getting the Broncos their due representation in Canton, which I think is actually going to happen over the next several years. I think Terrell Davis is just the beginning of what will probably be a plethora of Broncos going to the Hall of Fame in the next several years.
Well, look, and first and foremost, I mean, I want to talk about this on a radio show at some point. I'm certainly going to ask you about it when we have our usual Friday get together. I mean, what it'll be interesting to see how people remember DeMarcus Ware, because sure, his prime years came with the Cowboys, but his championship came with the Broncos. And to me, you know, Ray Bourque, what's our lasting image of Ray Bourque? A great Boston yep. Bruin. My lasting image, now maybe it's not fair, but for a lot of people, when they show Ray Bourque, they're showing him raising the cup in the Avalanche sweater. They're not showing always his, you know, if it's a quick highlight, they're not getting the Boston highlights in there. And same probably will be said for DeMarcus Ware. And look, for me, if you're a Denver fan, and I don't know, I don't want to start stuff on the team's podcast, but if they were to find a way to put him in the Ring of Fame, I wouldn't have a problem with that either. I know it's only 3 years. But, Andrew, I'll tell you what, his greatest accomplishment as a Bronco in my mind, and he was a huge part of that Super Bowl 50 locker room, make no doubt about it. But I think, you know, aside from Von Miller's parents, DeMarcus Ware is the man that got Von Miller turned around and turned into the MVP caliber defensive player, and even league MVP caliber for me, defensive player that he is now. And I think Von has made no bones about that. DeMarcus got in here. He's a good guy. He loves football. He loves the grind. Peyton Manning spoke in that to the letter he released to the local media, praising the teammate and the player that DeMarcus Ware was. And I think without DeMarcus Ware's influence at the time of Vaughn's career that it came into, I don't know that Vaughn has a $70 million guaranteed contract. I don't know that Von Miller enjoys the offseason that he enjoyed a week ago, or a year ago, I should say. I don't know that Von Miller is really the player that he is right now. The natural physical ability is there, but I don't care who you are. We all need the right influences in our professional career, and Von Miller needs to thank John Elway personally for bringing DeMarcus Ware into his life, in my mind.
Yeah, and I hope, and I certainly expect that DeMarcus Ware will still be a part of Von Miller's life going forward. I think he will be, and there's every bit of evidence and belief that the two are going to remain close, and that Von's going to continue to lean on DeMarcus, and when there are things that, in his life and his career that he is confronting, that he's going to continue seeking out the counsel of DeMarcus Ware. I think that's the gift that keeps on giving. It's like Champ Bailey, and what he showed as far as how to be a pro and how to prepare to a guy like Chris Harris Jr. And Champ is still in that locker room because Chris Harris Jr. is still in that locker room playing at a high level and kind of carrying on that tradition and that standard. And I think with Von Miller with a long-term contract with the Broncos, I think DeMarcus Ware's standard is going to continue to linger in that locker room. So just as Peyton Manning's standard lingers in the locker room for a lot of guys who played with him, even though they're not with the team anymore on a day-to-day capacity, they're still around in some way. What they taught is still around in some way.
Yeah, it's amazing. Really, to your point about Champ Bailey, boy, you go back to the 2015 team, I would say David Bruton, Kayvon Webster, Chris Harris, all affected by being around Champ Bailey for a while, right? You're right. It's one of those things where even though DeMarcus will be gone, his leadership will always be felt as long as you have this core together. Now, you and I have talked about it. Keeping this defensive core together is going to get trickier and trickier with the way contracts are going up. I guess as we get back to the free agent moves, Andrew, I know this hasn't brought the quarterback that apparently, it's funny because it feels like a lot of Denver fans are in panic because Tony Romo isn't in their jersey yet. Yet we were doing polls and kind of taking a litmus test from Bronco fans or taking the temperature of the water, however you want to put it, before free agency opened. And I had plenty of Bronco fans that didn't seem to really care whether Tony Romo showed up or not. I realized, I guess, the point being the last 5 days hasn't been what everybody thought, judging by reports and the momentum that even you and I think felt heading into Thursday, where we thought Tony Romo would be released, so on and so forth. But I think the Broncos, in a class that has had, let's be honest about it, the offensive line class has been said to be, a good workman class, but not a superstar class, not a class that you want to drop the bar-changing money, shall we say, as far as the new bar for the position. I think John Elway's done a good job, frankly, of being smart about the money again. And maybe, I would say to the fans out there that feel like the weekend wasn't what they'd hoped, I would remind them to go look at Houston, who opened the offseason last year with a bang and now gave up a second-round pick just to get someone to take that regretful contract to Brock Osweiler's away from them. Washington, Jacksonville, they're always winning the first day of March and don't seem to be around come the first day of January for the playoffs.
Yeah, it's like I told somebody last week, Houston had the big first day of signings because, of course, it wasn't just Brock Osweiler. And what did it get them? It got them the same record as they had the previous year, and the only reason they advanced one round farther in the playoffs than they did the year before is because they faced a Raiders team that was completely decimated by injuries. I mean, when you're without your starting quarterback and then you're without your backup quarterback and you're without starting left tackle Donald Penn, just simply too great to overcome going on the road against a hostile defense like Houston had. But the signings did not make the Texans a better team. Jacksonville seems to be on the hamster wheel, having the same kind of frustrating season year after year, although we'll see what happens now that you've got Tom Coughlin steering the ship. Because even though he's not the head coach, he's running things down there, and certainly he's going to, I think, improve the standards of what the Jaguars do. But, it's not about winning day one, and it's not a free agency, and it's not even about even the first few days. I mean, you wait, and sometimes those value signings will come. And Vance Joseph, he talked in addition to John Elway on Monday. And I thought he made a really good point. And he said, look, you know, about left tackle. Okay, we have some internal options. You know, Donald Stevenson's been a left tackle. I think they're going to take a look at Menelik Watson as well. But he said, you know, the market is changing. Guys get, you know, guys get cut. Guys hit the market that you don't expect. And, you know, one example, a guy like King Dunlap, the Charger, who's played for the Chargers the last few years, and he's had some injuries, and the Chargers decided to let him go on Monday. The market is always evolving, and, you know, the Broncos still have cap room. They could bring somebody in. They could even swing a trade for a left tackle. I think there's a lot of possibilities, and even though I think they're going to take a long, hard look at these tackles in the draft, I don't necessarily think that they're going to get their week one left tackle from the draft. I think it's still going to be a guy with some experience. And believe me, they want to go into the draft knowing they don't have to pick a specific position. They can just take the best player on their board for what they need at this time.
You and I both know, and again, I'm going to caution folks. I don't know why. I just feel like words that we spoke a year ago seem to be forgotten. And, you know, I've been repeating it with Paxton Lynch. It was not said Paxton Lynch, even by year two, was going to be ready to go. So I'm going to caution folks, don't get ready to do a freak out about left tackles at number 20 in particular, since you brought up the draft. It has been said, even if they trade up, there's no guarantee a left tackles. There's no Ryan Clady, if we want to take from Bronco history in this draft, as I've read it, from the scouts, from the GM's assessments. And, you know, sometimes those guys are wrong, but let's say more often than not, they've got a pretty good batting average. And I would say none of them have said there's that plug-and-play left tackle in the draft like you had with Ryan Clady in his class. It's not going to happen. Don't be looking for the Broncos to reach for one at 20. Maybe the right situation comes along. Maybe there's a guy that they feel differently about than some of the other evaluators. But for the most part, I wouldn't be shocked if the left tackle doesn't come later, as you said, on someone they have to develop. Maybe they look at a King Dunlap. Maybe they look at a Sebastian Vollmer. Maybe there's another guy out there we haven't heard about that they
maybe
turn
even
into
a Ryan
something.
Clady return.
Well, there you go. Yeah, it could be any of those things. The bottom line for me, Andrew, I will say this. With the situation that we have right now with the free agents that are left and the class that is in the draft, I don't even need them to find. I'm not looking for your 10-year answer at left tackle right now. Just find me someone that gets through the next year to take advantage of this D.
And then if you can find a guy or, you know, between a veteran starter and a veteran backup, someone in your midst that can fill in if you need to go to your reserve, then that frees you up to say, okay, who is the highest upside guy in this draft at tackle that maybe he's an athletic freak that just either needs to get in the weight room, needs technical refinement. A guy that I've been watching a lot of lately is Antonio Garcia of Troy. And I don't see him as anything more than a second-round pick, but I would say as far as the skill set for left tackle, I think his ceiling is higher than Ryan Ramczyk, Cam Robinson, Garrett Bowles. He just needs time. And if you can find veteran options at left tackle, then you can pick a guy like that. And maybe that's how you're going to have to find your long-term left tackle is, to use a second- and third-round pick on an athletic-type player who you refine and mold in that left tackle. Very similar to what the Saints did with Terron Armstead in recent years, finding him out of Arkansas Pine Bluff on day two, and eventually he's grown into a very good tackle. Maybe that's the route the Broncos are going to have to take for the long haul. And then, like you say, get through this next year or even 2 years with veteran answers up at that position.
Well, and again, I would point to the Seattle Seahawks. Now, I'm not going to make it sound like they've already all of a sudden got a top five line in the league, but I do know this. The Seahawks started off as a line that everybody thought was going to be a disaster and steadily got better as the year went along. At this point, I would take that storyline. Look, if you can be solid from left guard to right tackle with the signings of O'Leary and a Menelik Watson and hopefully the healthy return of a Matt Paradis, and, you know, whether it's Max Garcia, whether it's Schofield, whether it's, you know, I don't know, maybe one of the young kids, Connor McGovern, whoever it may be, you know, it's not set in stone as to what this offensive line is going to look like. But if those four can be solid, and you can help your left tackle out, and you can give some tight end help, whoever that may be, and maybe it's a Donald Stevenson playing left tackle again. Again, if you can shore more up than what you had last year, it's still going to be an improvement, and you can still function better. Because let's be honest, they just never, as much as we'd like it to be, they just never got the chemistry last year that they wanted to, And if you can just get four of the five guys to gel, to me, Andrew, that's an improvement, frankly, over last year at any point.
And if you're doing more shotgun, and if you're having whoever ends up at quarterback getting the ball out faster, that too is going to help the offensive line, I think. So this is in the end, I think you're going to be looking at a better line, and the Broncos are going to get there certainly in a different way. But it would be, you certainly hope you're not talking about a line that struggles like last year's line did, because if it does, then this offense is going to have a lot of problems. But Mike McCoy is very good at kind of fixing things and adapting to where the weak points are and making sure you can minimize deficiencies on an offense. And I imagine that's what he and Jeff Davidson are going to be able to do on this line. I think he's going to get the most out of a guy like Max Garcia, who I think is really going to be helped by putting some more power stuff in. And Menelik Watson, just really intriguing. I love this kid coming out of Florida State, but I thought when I watched him, okay, this guy is a 3 to 4 year project simply because he took up American football in 2011. He was still learning the game. And how he does, it's going to be fascinating, because his development's been hindered by injuries, including an Achilles that kept him out for all of 2015. But if he can stay healthy, and he's said he chose the Broncos because of their training staff and their strength and conditioning staff and the ability, for Luke Richardson and his strength staff to keep guys healthy. They do a lot of different type things. It's a much more modern regimen they have than some of the old school tactics that some other teams still use. So he figures that can keep him healthy. And if that's the case, then he's going to get the repetitions he needs. And if Watson succeeds, this might change the template on what kind of free agents teams pursue and how teams choose to build offensive linemen. Because as we've talked about, there's such a difference between college and pro football now that the plug-and-play guys on the offensive line, especially at tackle, they're very hard to find, if not impossible to find in some years. And maybe you're talking about a 3 to 4 year development period for some of these offensive linemen, which means even when they hit free agency for the first time, you're still talking about some unfinished products that you have to project. Menelik Watson may be one of those guys, and the Broncos may be able to get what the potential has always been there for.
Yeah, for whatever it's worth, Ed McCaffrey loved the kid. He liked Wagner, but then he was really intrigued by Watson. Again, you got to get him to stay healthy, so let's hope this is, he's over that rough patch. And frankly, I wouldn't mind seeing a King Dunlap come in here. And again, the Chargers have had as many problems as anybody trying to keep guys healthy. Maybe this, Luke Richardson and the way he does things, maybe he could keep a King Dunlap healthier and so on and so forth. We'll see. The options are out there. I'll tell you what, I don't know that I want to dive in full, because I don't know that you and I understand necessarily everything going on with the Tony Romo situation. It feels to me like the couple in a divorce that promised to just mediate things out, and now they're both lawyering up because Jerry Jones is not letting Tony Romo go. There's word that maybe Tony Romo prefers Houston over everybody else, and because of that, Jerry doesn't want him staying in the state of Texas, but I guess has not felt drawn to trade him to a team he doesn't really want to go to. I guess just to touch on the topic quickly enough, I don't know how you feel, whereas I think had we recorded a podcast last Wednesday, I would have said it feels like Tony Romo is about to be the next quarterback of the Denver Broncos. Now, as we sit almost a week later as we record this podcast, I guess I would say Bronco fans at this point, especially with John Elway and Vance Joseph comments today, I don't know that I get my hopes up. I don't know that ultimately, even if Romo's released, just getting the vibe off Elway, I don't know that the price tags are going to meet up for what Romo thinks he should get and what the Broncos probably would be willing to pay.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of the price tags, even though the Broncos certainly do have the room to give him a contract with a reasonable base that has incentives built in. I don't get that sense that they're looking at him. The sense I get is that they are comfortable with the two quarterbacks they have. And then, like Vance Joseph said, you add a guy because you need another arm, because you might have an injury. And it'll be a question of what kind of arm that is, whether it's an experienced veteran type, who think of the guys that kind of linger on the market for a while, or maybe somebody who's a rookie. It might be both. I could see them adding a veteran to fill out the depth chart, and then a rookie just to compete in, a late round draft pick or an undrafted free agent, and then you see what happens. But I don't get the sense that there's any momentum for Tony Romo, and I also get the sense that John Elway and Vance Joseph are very confident in what they have and very confident in Trevor Siemian. I mean, you can hear it from Vance Joseph. Every time he talks about Trevor Siemian, it's praise, it's confidence, it's admiration for the way he played through that shoulder injury. I get the sense that Vance Joseph and the offensive coaches, you know, that they went into their film study sessions of the 2016 Broncos open-minded, wanting to take a close look at Trevor Siemian, and that they all came away thinking, boy, this kid is really tough. He's, you know, he's a leader. There's something we can work with. And I know that's not what some fans want to hear, but like we've said, what's to stop Trevor Siemian from getting better in this offense? Why is there the belief in some quarters that he's hit a ceiling, that this is all there is? Young quarterbacks with experience often get better. Why can't Trevor Siemian?
Well, and to echo that point, when the false trade report came out about the Jets and Broncos talking trade, which folks need to understand, this time of year, the Jets coaches, I don't know where the report came from. It came out of New York. It certainly was not said by any of the Denver media. And who knows who said what, and whether even the comment was, hey, we may ask Denver about, you know, Trevor. And, you know, that becomes, oh, they're talking trade and blah, blah, blah. All I know is once it broke last week and I had to laugh that Trevor and the Jets, you know, is the link of Trevor to the Jets. Well, then Adam Schefter came out and said, if Trevor Siemian were to become available, a number of teams would have interest. So for the Bronco fans that don't believe there can be any more out of Trevor Siemian, I would just say go back and read Adam Schefter's Twitter timeline and look for the tweet where he references that there will be multiple teams, not just the Jets, that would love to have a conversation about Trevor Siemian. And I don't really think John Elway is too interested, as he made pretty clear, in having that conversation right now.
And Vance Joseph, he made another great point when he said, this team, it's in a great spot because it has two young quarterbacks that it likes. And, you know, may the best man win, I think is how it is going to be. But, you know, that they sounded like two men who are very confident that from these two, one will emerge that can get them exactly where they want to go, coupled with an improved offensive line, coupled with a defense that improves against the run in 2017. And it's some people have said, hey, the sky is falling. Well, I'm at Broncos headquarters every weekday, and doesn't seem like the sky is falling there. Everything seems fine. They seem pretty confident in what they've got, and we'll see what happens. And, you know, maybe this means that people in pundits expect a little less from the Broncos this year. Maybe that's not the worst thing in the world.
Hey, look, and I know we've got to wrap it up here, but honestly, how come no one thinks the sky's falling when Green Bay, Pittsburgh, the New England Patriots, the teams like that don't sign a guy on the first day? I don't understand. Most of the franchises that seem to have their stuff together aren't signing first day free agents and making headlines.
Yeah, I mean, and even if on the rare occasion they do, like Green Bay, they get Martellus Bennett. I think they got Martellus Bennett for a cut rate, in part because of the fact that teams looking at the draft upgrade their tight ends. But yeah, it's, and you know, Pittsburgh will bring in some second wave guys. But yeah, you know, the like you mentioned, the teams that win March don't often win during the season. Now, the Broncos, believe of course, are one of those exceptions. They won March back in 2014. And it paid great dividends, but that I think that's the exception that proves the rule. The teams that are there making these big splash signings year after year after year are not the ones that are contenders. So let's just let this thing play out. We'll see what the Broncos do at left tackle, but if they can bring in another left tackle at some point in the next few weeks, a veteran left tackle, then they can look at their starting 22. They can feel confident they have an experienced group. And then they can pick for the best player available, best player on their board. And that's what you want to have when you go into the draft.
Well, Andrew, I keep thinking it's the off season. We're not going to have much to talk about. And it's 35 minutes in. I don't know what's going to happen when we actually get to the season. So
there's always something to talk about. That's the thing. I mean, this has become a 12-month enterprise. And I'd say probably of those 12 months, only late June to mid-July is quiet, and hopefully will be quiet, because it wasn't quiet for the Broncos last year because, you know, you had all the stuff with Von Miller and the franchise tag and all that. But hopefully that part of the year will be quiet for the Broncos this year. But aside from that, you know, it's never ending. The topics come fast and furious, and the draft's going to be on us before we know it. And actually, in a couple of weeks, we'll be down at owners' meetings, and there'll be, you know, rules changes to talk about. We'll be hearing from Vance Joseph again and get another update on free agency. It's just the cycle just keeps spinning and spinning and spinning. That's what we have. Andy, thanks as always, my friend, and thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Horse and Round podcast.